WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Fresh Air listeners frequently ask about the regular contributors to the program who comment on movies, records, books, TV shows, and language trends. So from time to time, we're going to feature interviews with our contributors to give you and me the chance to find out how they developed the passions and opinions that they share with us each week. Every other week, our critic-at-large Lori Stone gives us her take on the arts and popular culture and on the social trends they reflect. Lori writes for The Village Voice and Ms. Magazine, and she's completing her first novel. Lori is a feminist, and her commentaries frequently analyze the sexual politics of the work she's reviewing. I wondered how feminism first entered her life.
I was in college at Barnard in the 60s, and Kate Millett was my teacher. And also Catherine Stimson was teaching at Barnard at the same time, and they were friends. And they, you know, introduced me to NOW. They said, why don't you come and, you know, go to some meetings. And exactly at the time that I went, all hell began to break loose. There was this Valerie Solanas shot Andy Warhol, and there was this whole internal struggle about T. Grace Atkinson and, you know, the sort of beginning, what would eventually become a sort of more radical fringe of the women's movement started to sort of percolate and bubble out of this event, and versus a sort of more conservative branch, which Betty Friedan represented having started NOW. It all sounded so good. It sounded like, oh, you know, this is what I've been waiting for my whole life, but I didn't exactly know it. It wasn't that I had been terribly, you know, hampered or disgruntled, but it was like a tremendous, you know, vote of confidence, really, about furthering, you know, my feeling of, you know, am I allowed to want? Am I allowed to do? Am I allowed to think? It was this great permission to do whatever the hell you wanted, basically. That's the way I experienced it. Not a way to change the world, to change me, is what the way I felt it.
You know, I get the sense that something you've had to wrestle with, as many women have had to wrestle with, is what do you do when you say, like a rock and roll record, but you realize that the lyric is really sexist? Or you have maybe a sexual fantasy and you realize this is not a politically admirable fantasy to have.
I've never had a politically admirable sexual fantasy, never.
What do you do when you actually like something that you can't really politically justify?
I, as I've gotten older, have become more, tried to become more peaceful about the dividedness, you know, of my feeling life, of and that this is the way human beings are, and that the politics has to constantly accommodate human emotion, not the other way around. I never liked the idea of political correctness, maybe because, you know, a lot of that had to do in the early days. A lot of it had to do with giving up men, and because I was, you know, heterosexual, but not just heterosexual, very involved with men and liked them a lot. They were my friends. They were my peers. Because of the kind of family life I came out of, whatever, you know, that I was just the kind of woman that didn't want to, you know, separate myself from men. And that was a sort of, you know, piece of political incorrectness at times, in places, as you probably know. You know, and I never wanted to give up a lot of the sort of pleasures and accoutrements of female life, you know, like dressing up and wearing makeup and stuff like that. I always liked that. I never wanted to give up anything having to do with sex or sexiness. But, you know, the American left has always had this terrible puritanical streak, and it leaked into feminism, you know, faster than a bullet. And, you know, and it's not true, you know, of the left in Europe and certain parts of Europe. You know, people have always been able to accommodate sensuality, pleasure, you know, good. You didn't have to give up good food to be, you know, to be a communist in France, God knows, you know. So, I mean, why should we give up our sexual fantasies? You know, Jesus, I think that it's that what we have to learn from our sexual fantasies is what we're about. I don't know if I'm really answering your question, because it's such a complicated subject that we've just fallen into.
But it seems that you trust your intuitions, and you don't adjust everything to your political views.
I would call it not my intuitions, but my feeling life, mm-hmm. my conscious attempt to understand the feeling life and look at it, not. You know, I don't mean to quibble with words, but intuition is a tricky one.
And yeah,
I'm not sure that I really
yeah.
have so much intuition. Uh-huh. You know, in fact, I think I'm highly unintuitive, but trained and by inclination to try to look at, well, what am I feeling first? And all the writing comes out of that, too.
Many of your reviews have been about how movies, television, theater, books are reflecting in sometimes unconscious ways our fear of AIDS.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that the effect of AIDS on our culture today is something that's not only of intellectual interest to you, but something that you're very kind of deeply emotionally involved with.
I it seems that this has happened. Well, when I took on this job of these commentaries, it was really, you know, we didn't know what it was going to turn out to be. But I think it's sort of taken, it's grabbed onto a theme. I was certainly going to look at issues of, you know, having to do with sexuality in men and women as a constant ongoing subject. But because now those issues are so totally inundated with issues having to do with AIDS, I think the pieces have taken on a kind of AIDS theme. And I think that something really has happened to the culture at large, and I feel very much a part of it. That is, I would say a year and a half to 2 years ago, I think it's really only maybe about a year and a half ago, when we started being inundated by condom ads on TV and the idea in the media everywhere that heterosexuals were at risk, that it instigated a kind of anxiety and hysteria that have become really, you know, global.
Do you ever feel that you are getting overcome by hysteria?
Yes.
That isn't necessarily based in reality and that you have to really sort through?
Absolutely, all the time. I mean, I think this is really everybody's problem. Who doesn't think inside themselves, you know, that somehow or other you're going to get punished if you get what you want, you know, if you get your pleasures? And sexual pleasure is, you know, the heart of it, you know, in terms of gratification. You know, if I do it, I'm going to get it. You know, if I get it, I'm going to be killed. I mean, these are the sentences we think in our heads. Now, there's an actual event to dovetail with our worst nightmares. Here's the way my mind works. I run through, genealogies of the guys that I slept with who look like they maybe, could have, maybe, when. Because now we have 10 years that we have to deal with back there. You know, this one said that he was wild. And I think, what does he mean by wild? Now, I know what he meant by wild. You know, sex clubs. And I think, well, you know, he said he never went with guys. And I think, but what does it matter if he went with guys? It's a sex club. You know, somebody else I knew said he did drugs when he was in his 20s, but I knew him when he was in his 40s. So I'm thinking, maybe he lied. Anyway, that's the way it goes. And you spin and you spin and you spin. Everyone has stories like this, you know, inside them. So what I try to do is calm myself and not, you know when I'm hysterical and tell myself, well, this is a piece of hysteria. This is not something that you're going to, you know, act out in front of people with AIDS. You may feel it, you may think it, but you're not going to do it. And this is, you know, this is where I stand, I guess, ultimately, you know, that hysteria is natural and it's natural in the culture. But what I see happening is that people aren't making that distinction. They're experiencing the hysteria and they think it's real. They think that the hysteria is a representation of reality.
When you look back on 1987, what do you think is going to sum up the year for you?
Well, it's personal and it's my book. But in terms of the world, gosh, the end of Reagan, I hope. I think Iran-Contra was fabulous. The hearings were the high point of my media viewing. And I suppose, you know, what we were saying before, you know, this sort of billowing up of this of hysteria about AIDS in the population at large. And this is dismaying.
Well, Laurie, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Fresh Air critic at large Laurie Stone spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in New York. We'll feature interviews with other Fresh Air commentators in the